The Summit County Council meeting starts tomorrow at 2:30 at the Kimball Junction Transit Center before council members walk back to finish their meeting at the Richland Services Building in the studio with details. County Manager Tom Fisher, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So why the visit to the Transit Center? No notes in the staff packet there for me.
Well, we've got a group, Rocky Mountain Power, some of their leadership, as well as the company that owns them, Berkshire Hathaway, some of their legislative folks are coming in to look at what we do around electricity to try and help our carbon footprint. So everything from our electric vehicle chargers to our electric buses and our bike share program are going to be highlighted on this little visit. And it gives a chance for both the Park City Council and the Summit County Council to interact with these folks a little bit and talk about perhaps our next legislative session and other things that are going on, both from a statewide basis and nationally, in order to move more vehicle use to electric.
Yeah, any proposed legislation that the county would like
to
see happen?
Well, I mean, it all goes around the initiatives of our county, Salt Lake County, Park City, Salt Lake City, and Moab, around moving towards 100% renewable energy availability for our electrical use. It probably there is legislation along the way somewhere in that process that we're going to have to be looking at, whether that's something that's happening nationally or on a statewide basis.
Yeah. Have we figured out what we're going to do when we get those new Proterra buses and how we're going to charge it with the difference in voltage?
I haven't heard the details on that, just the issue that you just raised. That's all I've heard about it at this point.
Yeah. And how is that project coming along there at Ecker Hill?
At Ecker Hill, it seems to be moving right along. I drive it every day as I come into work, so I get to see the daily progress or what sometimes on construction projects seems like not progress. But all the curb and gutter is in on Kilby. I know that they were working on the pedestrian tunnel between the parking area and the school this past week. They've been working heavily on the chain off area that will come off the highway. So a lot of progress still, as far as I understand it, still on track to have the road open by the time school starts and then be working more heavily on finishing the parking by the October timeframe.
All right. And is there any follow-up with Councilmember Roger Armstrong's comments about Summit County being more involved in the transit district?
Yeah, we've been having conversations with Park City about our relationship on transit over the course of the year, mostly at a staff level. We've ramped up those conversations. I think we're ready to perhaps start introducing some changes to the way we govern transit in the area. So got a few more conversations before the end of the month to solidify some of that stuff. We've got a very tight relationship on transit. We're integral to each other and how we fund it and how we operate it. And then just kind of figuring out what the needs are for the future. And we just want to make sure that the county council has a stronger say in that in the future.
Okay. And we talked yesterday with Brian Hanton from Basin Rec, who had met with the county council talking about some of the enhancements that are being proposed for Old Ranch Road. I mean, at this point, is it just maybe we're going to do these, or is it absolutely we need to do something?
Well, I mean, there's some things that from a safety perspective that the county feels that we're going to have to do eventually. And some of that has to do with the roadway surface itself. Right now, it ranges in width of asphalt around, it kind of averages around 22 feet of asphalt right now. So very much a country road type standard. Or a farm-to-market road, as you might say, it needs to have some widening to that in order to make it a safer facility because it does carry traffic between generators of traffic. So it also has some bike activity on it. So we would like to enhance that in the future. Not a large increase. Probably just looking at putting perhaps 5-foot shoulders on that to accommodate bicycles with 2 10-foot travel lanes. But some of the other amenities like trails and perhaps enhancing a stream bed or a canal bed in that area. Those are things that are more on the optional side, but you know, depending on who you talk to, some of those are more popular than others.
Is there a timeline on this?
There's no real timeline at this point. It's more certainly come up because of different kinds of open space acquisition opportunities and a development that's going in on the south side of Old Ranch Road. So with those kinds of things, we have to be talking about right of way as that goes into the future in order to accommodate those things that both the county is desiring, Basin Rec, and the community.
Has the county settled on what it will do with the Oscarthorpe Ranch in the event that is saved?
We haven't settled on it yet. Mm-hmm. We're still working on that. We're talking to the folks as we've continued to talk the whole time. I think we were waiting to see what some of these conversations were like with the neighboring properties in with some of these proposals. Now that we've gotten some feedback on that, I think we're going to continue those conversations in earnest.
All right. Back to the agenda. Summit County tomorrow will receive an award from the Utah Local Governments Trust, or I guess maybe you've already gotten it. I've said this before, but is it because the county doesn't get sued as much as it used to?
It's not about being sued. This is more about around our workplace safety programs. So this has to do with avoiding risk more than anything else. And we've put programs in place, and the Utah Local Government Trust continues to honor that with rebates back on our insurance programs.
All right. Later on at about 3:30, a discussion led by Human Resources Director Brian Bellamy on parental leave policy. Currently, my understanding is Summit County policy gives 6 weeks leave to a birthing parent. Now you're considering 4 weeks for a pair of parents. Is this something employees have asked for?
It's more becoming an issue of what's going on in the industry and being able to remain competitive in the employment arena and some of the just what's the right thing to be doing with our parental leave. So right now we offer just for birthing parent disability paid at about 75%. Up to 6 weeks. And then, of course, people can supplement that with their vacation or sick leave in order to bring that up to a full-time pay. And then employees have to pick options after that. So if they can choose to come back to work, they can stay on family medical leave, which is unpaid, for the remainder 6 weeks of that leave. Or they can choose other options, but they don't have pay options at that point, or they can cash out their vacation. You know, cashing out the vacation is really not a great way to deal with parental leave. And then the other issue we had with this is that it didn't deal with the non-birthing parent, and it didn't deal with parents that were adopting, which have the exact same issues that, especially if it's an infant, the exact same issues that a birthing parent has. So we wanted to expand that, and we're proposing that in front of the council to see how they want to approach that.
So how does that work? I guess it's just going over my head in terms of, I mean, so assuming I'm the birthing employee here, that means I would get 4 weeks full pay. And my husband or partner would get, the county would pay him?
Well, so if both of you worked for the county, that's the situation you've proposed there, you would both be on disability for that first 6 weeks. And then you would be offered an additional 4 weeks of full pay, which would equal 10, that you would be able to, and you'd have to do it concurrently. You can't stack it. As at the same time, your family medical leave works concurrently. So if you wanted to take the full 12 weeks of your family medical leave, 10 of those would be paid.
All right. So this is only for couples that have both work for the county.
That's correct. That's a pretty small population, as you can imagine. Mostly this deals with either the father or the mother of either a birthing set of parents or an adoptive set of parents.
Okay. Let's see. A proposed change for the East County Code. It looks like it's just some wordsmithing here.
It is. It's simply dealing with a calculation of how open space requirements related to cluster bonuses works. It's just a small tweak to the formula and the definitions within the formula in order to clarify how that's supposed to work with the new zones that are out there.
Okay. And then at 6:15, a two-hour meeting with the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. Explain while you're looking at some of the topics here. We've got mixed-use developments is one of the discussion items.
Yes. So, you know, I always like to defer to Pat on most of these from a standpoint of detail. However, the mixed-use zones have been in the proposal loop for about the past 2 years. They were heavily talked about in 2016 and early 2017, and then in order to finish up the Eastern Summit County Code, we kind of dropped those for a period of time. But they're back, and the Planning Commission is really wanting to dig into some of these issues now that were settled on codes, and this is one of them. And so that the council has read through these before. They're getting the detail again in order to give some advice to the Planning Commission on how to move forward.
All right. And then also considering taking the specially planned area known as SPA out of the code.
Yes, it is proposed. It's kind of asking the question whether the master plan development process, which has been talked about by the Planning Commission, could replace the SPA. So again, they're seeking the advice of the council on which way the council would like to go with that.
Okay, so a joint discussion, no decision necessarily.
No, absolutely not. No decisions, because of course anything that would be proposed to the code from the Planning Commission would have to be a recommendation to the council eventually in order to make a final decision.
So this would come back to the Planning Commission for a recommendation.
Yeah, all of these issues would go back to the Planning Commission, including, you know, some work on workforce housing updates, lighting standards, sustainability efforts within the code, those types of things. Those are the things that they're going to talk about on Wednesday to get some definition or get some advice from the council on which way to go.
All right. Anything else on that agenda you think people need to know about?
Not really much on the agenda. There's just a whole lot going on out there. The I-80 closure that people are hearing about, which will happen on the 31st of this month and the 1st of the next month, depending on which direction you're going. People should go to udot.utah.gov to get the detail on that. That's going to affect people going back and forth to Salt Lake City. And then some other things going on in the area. We've got nonprofit grants out right now as part of our budget process, and those are due on the 31st. We still have fire restrictions and on, and that's important as we go through this holiday day and holiday week this week. And Board of Equalization is in its process as of notices going out in the mail yesterday.
Okay. And any tax increases on this one?
No. The Board of Equalization deals strictly with your value that's placed on your property.
Okay. I got a couple of questions just off the agenda.
Sure.
The Commons at New Park, you had approved the plan here. Now there's been an appeal. So when does this come back before County Council?
Well, I've seen both the appellants and the applicants providing responses to different documents to build the record for that hearing. I'm not sure on when it's been scheduled at this point.
Okay. And again, it's an issue of just really what was written in the original development agreement?
Well, it's from the decision that I had to make as part of the process of either upholding what the Planning Commission was recommending or not. My opinion is that the development is warranted under the development agreement. It is one of the, I think it's the last bit of density that's coming in for build. Some people don't like where it's placed within the property. And that's what the appellants, and they have some other arguments that I'm not going to deal with at this point, or not deal with, but not articulate, because it's their argument to make. But you know, that they have a different opinion of that, and they have the process to appeal that to the council at this point.
All right. So this didn't come to council for a decision.
No, it, as part it. Of the development agreement, it came to the manager.
All right. And so they hear it what's called de novo as a new...
I believe that's correct.
So it would be a long meeting at that point.
It could be a long meeting, as those types of appeals often are.
All right. And also the employee housing requirement for Promontory. Promontory says the obligation falls on South Point. South Point people have withdrawn their application. So where do we go from here?
Well, I mean, so what else is also out there is a application that's been going through the process and is in front of me for another one of the development agreements that comes to me is the Nicholas Clubhouse that is part of the Promontory development. That is in an ongoing hearing right now that will next be heard on August 2nd. The Planning Commission made a recommendation to me to deny that development based on similar reasons around the workforce housing not moving forward in a reasonable time frame. So that's what I'm considering at this point.
Okay. All right, Tom. Hey, thanks for coming in on the holiday.
Absolutely. And everyone have a great holiday.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.
Hi, I'm Tony Tyler with Columbus Pacific Development. We're a proud sponsor of Mountain Money programming on KPCW.
Well, BIFF, known as the Bicknell International Film Festival, it's a two-day celebration of cheesy B-movies. It launched back in 1996 in Bicknell, Utah, and is now returning after a short hiatus. On the phone to tell us more, I have former Park City resident, KPCW Program Director and Morning Personality, Don Gomes. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Leslie. Nice to be here with you.
Yeah, well, so of course, people who weren't here in the 1990s certainly won't remember that you and I woke up Park City every weekday morning here on KPCW. Seems a lifetime ago.
Well, short lifetime.
Yes. Yeah, so always great to talk to you. But after a few moves across the country for you and your wife, Annie, from Indianapolis to Alaska, you two have settled in Torrey, where you've had a second home for decades. Tell me a little bit about this. I mean, we had the BIFF, the International Film Festival, take place there in a theater that then what got renovated? So the festival ended, or?
Well, there were several things. It had changed ownership, and that was a difficult time. And then there just was, I guess you'd call it a lapse in leadership regarding BIFF. When we came back here, and it had always been our dream to be here, I hesitate to use the term retire because it's certainly not retirement at this point. But BIFF was always an icon for people. A lot of fun. The films were, as you say, cheesy, celebrating the whole B-movie episodes of the 30s and 40s. They were meant to be kind of like the B-side of a record back in those days when people remember what records were. The B-movie was the second movie on a twin bill. And so we decided, yeah, with the help of the Entrada Institute as the sponsoring agency, to bring it back. And it's a lot of fun with movies that you can laugh at because they're so bad, or maybe the timing is such that maybe they were terrific in their day, but they just didn't bear the test of time. And so we're going to rebuild BIFF. And having lived in Alaska, as you said, we chose the theme Alaska, movies worth freezing for in July. And one of them is called Moose the Movie. And Chad Carpenter, who does the Tundra comic strip, we got to know him when we were there. And he put this film together. And it's set in Gangrene Gulch. There's a humanoid supernatural moose that's set loose. And everyone is quite concerned, and the new park ranger and everyone else are set on quite the wild ride. And it's a silly kind of brainy comedy. And then on Saturday, we'll do North to Alaska. That was made in 1960. It was one of those things where some named actors had some time on their hands, like John Wayne and Ernie Kovacs, Stuart Granger, Fabian, and Capuchin. Anybody who remembers the the Pink Panther series, and Bud's New Pussycat, she was part of that scene back then. And the big attraction for this movie was mainly Johnny Horton's song, North to Alaska, and people typically were Rotten Tomatoes, and they got to the film, and just it was not that great. But Biff is a fun activity, and of course you get a lot of fun people together, and then you have even more fun. The spoof on the Sundance Film Festival, and just the notion that we're not going to take it too very seriously. Back in the day, the whole festival was started by Trent Harris, who's an independent filmmaker and still doing some work. Laurie Smith, who's moved to New York now, but was involved with the Film Commission and was programmer for Sundance for a lot of years, and James Anderson, who owned what was then called the Wayne Theater and was buddies with Laurie and Trent in those days. And so they got it started in 95, 96, and here we're reviving it for probably a whole new audience. So there's a lot of people where there's pent-up demand. They were looking for it to happen again, and then there's a whole new set of folks who have heard the legends of Biff.
Right. Now, are Trent and Laurie still involved?
No. They've moved on. Laurie is in New York, like I say, and he's an artist and doing very well. Trent's still doing some films and having fun with that. Laurie Smith, you'd appreciate this. The beauty of live radio, I interviewed him years ago there at KCPW for an arts program, and he was on his cell phone on the side of the road, and a police officer pulled over, so we had to interrupt the interview, the live interview, because the policeman wanted to know if there was a problem or if he was some kind of vagrant. But,
So it always happens on the Pioneer Day weekend, is that, or after Pioneer Day? Or
and on or around it, yeah. We chose to do it this weekend because in Torrey, they typically do the Pioneer Day celebration the weekend before, and so we didn't want to compete with that. And then the other part of it, too, is that the Sister Wives are scheduled to play at the Rimrock Patio on Friday night, so that's where the Friday night party will be. 3 years ago, actually, the Sister Wives and us and a few other people had a mock funeral for Biff because everybody missed it so much. And then Saturday night, we'll be at the Savory here in Torrey, and have a grand time with that.
Yeah. So are you still going to hold the parade? I mean, basically, you guys walked from what, Torrey to Bicknell?
From Torrey to Bicknell, there'll be the caravan. Everybody can gather at 6 p.m. in the Saddlery parking lot, and then folks will drive to Bicknell. We have a costume contest, and we're encouraging everyone to dress Alaskan. And however you interpret that, it's up to you. I'm hoping that there'll be some quite the variety of miners and dance hall girls and animals. And, there'll be a special prize for anybody that shows up with a sled dog team.
Okay. All right. So you have just a couple of films to show then?
Yeah. In the past, they would do a Saturday afternoon film with a quote-unquote forum. But we're just doing the two films and kind of easing back into things with Biff.
Okay. Again, it's just a 3-hour drive from Salt Lake?
Yeah, three and a half hours, and lots of fun. There's lots of places to stay and other things to do and see while you're in Wayne County and Torrey. And you can reserve tickets in advance or buy them at the door. But the Bicknell Theater is handling that for this. It's been renamed the Bicknell Theater. They did a great renovation job on the space, and that's they can buy tickets at 435-425-3493.
Okay. All right. Well, great to always hear you, Don. So we'll hope to see you soon.
Leslie, great to talk with you.
And that's Don Gomes. Again, if you're interested, you can find out more by just looking up the Bicknell International Film Festival online through the Entrada Institute. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:38. KPCW News Time now, 8:38. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Park City mixologists are competing in a month-long cocktail contest for a chance to be crowned as Park City's top bartender, taking home $200 in a cash prize and bragging rights in the studio with details about how to vote before the contest ends. I have the director of the Park City Restaurant Association, Ginger Rees. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so how many competitors do we have in this year's?
We've got 23 restaurants competing this year, which is great.
All right, and how is it that somebody gets to compete? I know it's too late to do that now, but...
So the first step would be you'd need to be a member of the Park City Area Restaurant Association. And then from there, it's open to all of our members. And you simply sign up to participate and create your drink, submit your recipe, photo. Some have submitted videos, and then we post it online and start marketing.
Right, right. So how is the winner chosen?
The winner is chosen based off of votes. So for the month of July, folks have been going into the different participating establishments, sampling the various cocktails, and then going online and voting.
All right. So to vote, do you have to buy a drink?
You don't necessarily have to buy the drink. You could simply go online and vote. All the recipes are online and pictures are online. But the idea, of course, is to drive business into the restaurants and then to have folks go back and cast their votes at our website.
Okay, and that is Park City?
ParkCityRestaurants.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about some of the...
Yeah, absolutely. So we definitely have a head-to-head contest going on right now between Handel and Tupelo. Those two are the top two. Last night, I was actually online looking at it, and they were tied. This morning, Tupelo is up by one vote. A couple of days ago, Handel was up. So that they're definitely battling it out. And then a close third place is Royal Street Cafe, Bonnie Ulmer. She's a winner of this contest for many years. So she is in a close third place. So those are your top three.
Okay. And what is it? Just they can really just do whatever they want. Yeah.
I mean, this is just an opportunity for the mixologists to showcase their talents. We have some amazing bartenders in our community. We're obviously always focusing on the culinary side of things, but mixology is really coming up in the ranks and becoming more and more popular. And it is a skill. I mean, it's a talent for sure. And these bartenders put a lot of thought and passion into their drinks. And you can see that just by how, you know, in some of the pictures that they send online. And again, there are a couple of videos as well. So it's a fun way to showcase the talents in our community.
Yeah. And so once they win, mm-hmm. I mean, basically mm-hmm. on the number of votes, so what happens? Because I think you market it as kind of the Park City's cocktail for
well,
a year,
we market it as this kind of the summer cocktail, the winner of the summer cocktail. So the bartender, as you mentioned, will win $200 cash and, of course, the bragging rights. And we as the association then will put out a big campaign in August highlighting just that cocktail, and hopefully driving a ton of business into the winning establishment so folks can go in and sample the winning cocktail if they haven't already.
Yeah. You've been doing this for how long?
This will be our fifth year that we've done an online version. And we went to an online version because it gives patrons, visiting guests, locals, time to get out and sample all the amazing cocktails. Again, we've got 23 entries, so that gives everybody a chance to get out and enjoy. And it's a little bit easier to host an online cocktail contest than doing it in an establishment.
All right. And then as years go on, I mean, do Bonnie, some of her winning recipes, do they continue to be offered in the restaurant?
Yeah. Yes, for sure. Royal Street's Blueberry Mojito. I don't know if you haven't ever had that. It's definitely worth a visit up to Deer Valley. So I do think some of the restaurants do highlight them. Again, we post all the recipes online. So if you're an aspiring mixologist at home, you can certainly find some examples there as well.
Okay. So the last chance to vote is next Tuesday, midnight?
Yep. Last chance to vote next Tuesday at midnight. And then we'll be announcing the winner shortly thereafter.
Okay. Wanted to ask you about Save of the Summit Leadership Class 24. Mm-hmm. Worked with Save of the Summit to work on the co-composting message. How did that go?
It turned out great. Beth Rossi, who was part of the leadership group, really worked closely with myself and all of the other restaurants during the event. And so we provided recycling, trash waste, and then she went and some other folks from the leadership group went actually door to door to all the various restaurants and educated them on food waste and how to sort it out and discard all of it. And we would like to, as an association, continue that effort to all events in Park City, but specifically just in the day-to-day practices. So we're going to continue to try and move that needle, if you will, with our restaurants so that we can, you know, make the whole overall community a better green community. So, and I'm sure straws are going to be the next topic because that seems to be a hot one as well. So, and our board has, a couple of our board members have addressed the straw issue or topic rather. So I'm sure that will be coming up through the ranks as well.
Yeah. It's just such a habit, I think, more than anything.
It is a habit. And, you know, if you truly understood how awful they are for the environment, I think you would change, you know, your mindset might change. And I think it's just simply educating people because I don't think people really understand.
Yeah. I mean, I've made it to the point where it's like,
please
don't put one in.
Right.
But you have to ask.
You do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are some people that actually do need a straw. So finding that balance.
Sure. Let's see. Are you hearing anything kind of feedback after the latest round of liquor law changes?
I mean, obviously the July 1st deadline has come and a lot of restaurants have had to make changes. And I think everybody's sorting through that on how that's affecting their day-to-day business and their marketing styles and whatnot. For example, High West now is a bar. So if you're 21 and under, you can't go into High West. And so it's just an adjustment. And I think restaurants are sorting through it. And I don't see any, I haven't heard any rumblings of what are going to be the hot topics coming into the next legislative session. But we're working closely with Des Barker. So hopefully we can stay in front of any issues that might be coming up. But it's an adjustment.
Yeah, he's an employed lobbyist, I think, for Summit County Chamber Bureau or something. Yeah,
as well as us. Yeah.
Right. So I mean, would you be a good contact point if people do have some concerns about, you know, just to at least get that feedback to a person?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. If any of our restaurants, whether you're a member or not a member, we are here to try and work through all those legislative processes. It is very challenging. I've learned a lot in the last little while just working with Des, but for sure, if there are specific issues anyone is having and they want to submit those, you can certainly email me or contact me and we can try and help sort through those. But it is a challenge for not only restaurants in Summit County, but restaurants throughout the state.
Yeah. ParkCityRestaurants.com. Again, that's the website
yes.
to get your email address. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other events that you got coming up you want to let us know about?
The next big event or promotion that we'll have coming up is in October, the first 2 weeks of October, the Dine About. So stay tuned for information on that. I can't believe we're talking about October, but that will be our next big one. So.
Okay. Ginger, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Ginger Reese is the executive director of the Park City Restaurant Association. Park City's Extreme Soccer Cup returns to town this week, and as part of that, they are offering a parent symposium in the studio. With details, I have Emily Fisher, director of the Youth Sports Alliance, also a soccer parent. John Brankus is a six-time Emmy-winning creator, producer, and host of ESPN Sports Science, also the chief sports science officer at Athletic Republic. He'll be leading the symposium Friday night. It's an evening of education and adventure about parents' roles in transforming potential into performance. So good morning to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
And we're hoping that Shelley Gilwald will also be joining us to tell us a little bit more about the soccer tournament. But that kind of what kicks off now, soon?
Yeah, so it's the 15th annual Extreme Cup in Park City, and it's the big soccer tournament in town. We have 480 teams coming, so it should be a really exciting weekend of soccer. And we have soccer in Park City, Heber, Camas, sort of all over. And this year, the exciting part is that we are adding a parent symposium, which I feel like is a very new and great addition to the tournament. So that will be Friday night. It's 6:30 to 8, and it's at the Legacy Lodge at Park City Mountain.
Okay. And who is this for, the symposium?
So the symposium is aimed at the parents that are here for the Extreme Cup. So it's kind of a new thing that instead of just focusing on the games and the competition, that giving the parents an educational opportunity while they're here, and something sort of new and different they can learn about, all different types and things. And we're going to do sort of 15-minute TED Talk parts during that evening. And it's free for all of the parents. And while the parents are at the parent symposium, the athletes can be working with Athletic Republic is going to have a recovery zone, so they can do 10 to 15 minutes of stretching with the Athletic Republic staff. Or they can be playing out at Park City Mountain's Awesome Adventure Park. So they're going to offer some discounted passes for players.
Okay, so John, as Chief Sports Science Officer, Athletic Republic, what is it that you do exactly?
So what I'm working very closely with Athletic Republic on, really not only messaging on how to turn athletic potential into performance, but really diving deep into the science behind all the workouts that not only Athletic Republic has, but that are out there in the market. What's interesting about this symposium for athletology is that parents, you know, so many things are targeted at the athlete themselves. What this symposium is really designed for is to really empower the parents, because there isn't just sort of one place to go where you can have top-notch speakers on a wide variety of topics. So I'll be kicking off kicking off the event, and we're going to have talks, 15-minute talks, you know, much like TED Talks. We're going to have Creating a Culture of Excellence, which is the Developing Elite Soccer Players by Dr. Mark Williams. Then we have Nutrition, a talk on nutrition for adolescent athletes by Jenna Ellis, who's an amazing dietitian. We have a talk on mindset development, which is the 8 mental habits for your next sports breakthrough. We have reducing the risk of ACL injury and positive coaching within youth sports development. Each of these talks is going to be it's going to be brief, just 15 minutes, huge variety, and most importantly, really engaging the parents. I highly encourage anybody who's associated with the Cup, with the Extreme Cup, to come out. Parents, coaches, any players, anybody who's associated with it can come and really become educated on the resources that are available there. And obviously, check out Athletic Republic. And not only what everything Athletic Republic is doing, but also just the resources that are available at Athletology.
Yeah, so tell me about Athletic Republic. I mean, what is it that it does?
So Athletic Republic is boutique fitness, where you have workouts that are tailored on a per sport, per athlete basis. So it's not just going to a gym with a trainer and just doing a generic workout. It's really tailored specifically for the sport and for the player. So for soccer specifically, there are soccer-specific workouts to work on explosion, cutting, reaction time, everything across the board that involves soccer. But Athletic Republic obviously is far wider in scope than just soccer. So it's everything from skiing to golf to, you know, lacrosse to football. It has workouts for every single sport that are individually tailored, not only for position within sport, but to the individual.
Yeah. As you mentioned, this is really for the Soccer Extreme Cup yep. parents who are here. But in terms of the talk, does it cover all sports? I mean, it's not soccer specific, is it?
So at Athletology, we are going to be focused. We'll be focusing, obviously, on soccer. There's a global messaging to parents in terms of here are resources, here are things that you can utilize for all sports. But we're obviously targeting soccer because that's the audience. Who's going to be there.
Okay. So, yeah, a great lineup. And again, as you mentioned, things are going to move pretty quick, 6:30 to 8. Again, it's the second floor of the Legacy Lodge there at base of Park City Mountain. Let's turn to Shelley Gilwald. She is the executive director of Park City Soccer, of also the Extreme Club. As Emily was telling us, you've got nearly 500 teams.
We do. We are at 483 teams with a record-setting 68 brackets of young athletes, girls and boys, from ages 8 to 18.
So, you know, there's what, at least 10, a dozen players on each team. So mm-hmm. how many people are we talking?
You know, we estimate that there's almost 9,000 participants. And in addition to the athletes, that includes managers, coaches, and referees, the game officials. But yeah, it's quite large. But with that, Leslie, I would like to say We have spread the tournament over the past number of years into out into Oakley and also into Wasatch. We have four venues and 15 fields over in Wasatch County. So I don't want people to get too nervous about the size of the tournament impacting, you know, Old Town Park City, because it really doesn't.
Yeah. Where are they going to be playing in Park City?
In Park City, we are along Kearns in Park City proper. So we're at the high school. We're at North 40, Treasure Mountain, and then, of course, the Park City Sports Complex at Quinn's. And then we're also in the Basin at Ecker Hill, Matt Canoop, Willow Creek, and Trailside Park and Trailside Elementary.
Okay. In terms of the teams, it's an invitation? Is that how it works?
No, it's not. But we do end up being very selective in our accepting teams, because we each year have anywhere from 50 to 100 teams who we end up turning away. So it is a competitive process. But for us, it's very important to have all levels of play participate in the Extreme Cup. So it's not just inviting and accepting the elite teams. We have, in a number of our age groups, we have actually five brackets, from a platinum down to a copper, because we encourage all levels of play. So we have teams that are just coming out of recreation play, or may play in a lower division in their state competition league. But that's also the makeup of our club. We have a broad variety of kids in the club at different levels of participation, and we want that in the tournament as well.
Yeah. So they come from what, all over the country, or any other location outside
the US? Intermountain West. We actually have California, Nevada, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado visiting this year. A good number of the teams, just given the magnitude of the tournament, do come from Utah. I think 17% of our teams are from out of state, or I call them out of region, say St. George.
Okay. And I still, with 483 teams, I mean, that's big. You haven't seen any decrease then, just due to the popularity of lacrosse?
No, we haven't. And that transcends the club level, too. We added 100 players and 5 new teams to the club this year. So soccer is continuing to grow. You know, World Cup years always help that. But even with our absence in the World Cup, but still... yeah, soccer's growing. The tournament continues to grow. And I will tell you that it takes an enormous amount of volunteer effort. We figure about 4,000 volunteer hours to pull off the tournament. And so with my co-director, Cora Lucero, we oversee a great staff of volunteers. And also, we have some great sponsors that make it happen. One of the things that we're able to do because of our sponsors, like Athletic Republic, Jamba Juice, and Hideout Canyon Soaring Hawk, we are able to take a whole new level in terms of sustainability this year. We are eliminating the sale of any plastic bottle at concessions. So okay. We have eliminated water bottles. We're now eliminating sports drinks. Our sponsors enable us to give away a reusable bottle. And that's one of our goals of the tournament as well, is to really up the bar for youth sports events in terms of sustainability.
Right. Great. Okay. Anything else you guys wanted to add? No? All right. Emily, John, Shelley, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Leslie. So much for having us.
Thank you.